I'm Tom Hall. Welcome to Midday. Baltimore buses have been rebranded and color-coded as Baltimore Link debuts. It cost $135 million, but will the new buses get you where you need to be faster and more reliably than the old ones? And is a revamped bus system an adequate replacement for the Red Line, an expansion of the light rail developed over a period of years, which Governor Larry Hogan derailed in 2015? MTA Acting Director Kevin Quinn tells us how it works and what it hopes to accomplish. Brian O'Malley from the Central Maryland Transit Alliance, Samuel Jordan of the Baltimore Transit Equity Coalition, and city planner Klaus Philipson weigh in on whether it will live up to its hype. So hop on board as we take a look at the Link. Midday gets rolling right after these headlines. And good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Very glad that you are with us this afternoon. After deciding to derail the Red Line extension of the light rail in 2015, Governor Larry Hogan promised an overhaul of the Baltimore bus system that he said would be a better option than the $2.9 billion light rail proposal. After almost 2 years of planning, the new system was launched in the wee hours of Sunday morning. It's called Baltimore Link. And MTA officials say that it will speed up time for commuters and get people closer to more of the places where they work. Today on the program, we'll take a look at the Link. Joining me in a little bit will be Brian O'Malley of the Central Maryland Transit Alliance, Samuel Jordan of the Baltimore Transit Equity Coalition, and urban planner and author Klaus Philipson. But first, Kevin Quinn joins me on the phone. He's the acting director of the MTA, and before that, he was the director of planning and programming. He's been working on the revamping of the bus system for some time now. Mr. Quinn, I know it's a busy day. I appreciate your time.
Sure. Yeah, no problem at all.
So basically, give us the you know, Reader's Digest summary of what the Baltimore Link system comprises. There are, you know, different parts of it, one called City Link, another called Local Link, Express Bus Link. Tell us how this all puts together.
Sure. So, you know, Baltimore Link is our effort to create a truly reliable, you know, transit system, interconnected transit system for the Baltimore area. So, you know, we start by taking a look at the operating network, and we restructured and re-examined a good number of routes. We put in place a new product for the MTA, which is the backbone of the system, which are 12 color-coded high-frequency lines that we call CityLink lines. And when I say high-frequency, they're running every 10 minutes in peak hours, every 15 minutes in the midday. And that really forms the backbone of the system. And we supplement those lines with a variety of other express buses and local buses throughout the system that interconnect also better with our rail infrastructure, whether it's our metro subway system, our light rail system, or our MARC commuter rail. So while that's, you know, the real focus on the operating side of things, we supplement that with a good bit of transit infrastructure. And so one piece of that is 5.5 miles of new bright red dedicated bus lanes in downtown Baltimore that are already down on Pratt and Lombard streets, and Baltimore and Fayette streets are just about done. Investments in transit signal priority by installing sensors on traffic signals on a couple pilot corridors that we'll be looking to expand, as well as on a number of our vehicles. And then lastly, in transfer facilities, like our new West Baltimore MARC transfer facility that just opened. So, you know, all of these investments in the capital infrastructure combined with a newly redesigned interconnected transit network, we think is going to really provide a great new reliable system for transit here in Baltimore.
So the cost of this new system has been estimated to be about $135 million. That's spread out over several years. Some folks who study this kind of thing pretty carefully have suggested that, you know, when you look at it on an annual basis, it really amounts to an MTA increase, budgetary increase of about 1.5%. And they say that that's not going to be adequate to not only implement the new system, but to maintain it. How do you respond to that concern?
Sure. So I think our operating network has been pretty inefficient for a number of years, and inefficient in a way that really duplicated resources and on some ways was an inefficient use of resources. And so by restructuring those resources, we're able to do that by, you know, the transit investments I was talked about earlier in the infrastructure. Those also give us some really good efficiencies throughout the system that, you know, budget numbers I just don't think carry the weight of kind of what we're trying to do here and the impact that we can have with that funding.
You and your staff had a very long night on Saturday night into the early hours of Sunday morning. This thing officially launched kind of like around 3 o'clock Sunday morning. One of the concerns on behalf of the drivers union, the transit workers union, was that there was inadequate education of the operators of the buses, of the drivers. What can you tell us about the status of that?
So all of our drivers for the past few months have been undergoing a really fantastic, rigorous training. So all of our operators went through a 3-day training course. It was a day in the classroom and 2 days out on the road to get to learn the new system. We also provided our operators with a ton of tools and resources. So one really cool thing that we did was a route instruction book that contains the lefts and the rights, the left turns and the right turns for every single route, whether it's going eastbound, westbound, northbound, you know, whatever it is. We provided that. We've provided, you know, little tearaway sheets that they can give passengers if they're unable to fully answer their questions. We installed computers at all of our divisions. We took all of our buses, all the new routes, and we essentially attached a GoPro to all of our buses and reran all the routes and then attached that camera footage using a program and downloaded it on those computers at the divisions. So at any point, any of our operators can sit down at one of those computers. There's four computers at each division and sit down and go in real time, you know, take a look at video footage of that route. In addition, we put made announcements at all the divisions. We put inserts in the last couple of operators' paychecks, excuse me, that, you know, indicated that if they needed more training to please let us know. Our operators are fantastic. I have the utmost respect for them and the fantastic work that they do every day, and I believe that we have provided them with the tools and the resources and the training to do a great job and help us run this new effective system.
So you say that training has been going on for a matter of months, but as I understand it, just make sure I have this clearly, that you didn't actually release the final route map until just a couple of weeks ago, about 16 days ago. I mean, does that give those operators enough time to, you know, to get familiar with it to the degree that they need to be in order to run the routes?
Yeah. So we while some of our maps are larger kind of network maps, foldable maps, were released a few days ago. We've had our network out that went to public hearing many, many months ago, and so you know, this network wasn't just sort of, you know, finalized in the last 2 weeks. It's been quite a number of months.
How are you going to know in 6 months or 12 months if this new system is in fact delivering on the promises that you've made about reliability, about speed, about accessibility? What are the metrics that you're going to use to decide whether or not this thing is living up to its promise?
Well, so you know, at this time we're still evaluating, you know, these reliability metrics. We put in place a brand new system, and so, for example, the CityLink routes aren't going to run on just a simple on-time performance kind of percentage. They're going to run on a new headway management system because, you know, it's about, you know, buses coming at a certain frequency, not necessarily arriving at a time point at an exact time. So, you know, we're still kind of evaluating as we just launched this. We're evaluating sort of all the exact metrics that we're going to be using, but we're doing constant monitoring of it, talking to our riders, making, you know, tweaks on the fly, some of which we've made today to be sure that the service works.
There have been those who've suggested it would be a good idea for the MTA to have an outside monitoring system, have a group of overseers to take a look at this and to have the evaluation part of it and the metrics analyzed by folks who are not inside the MTA. Are you open to that idea?
I don't know that makes a whole lot of sense. I mean, so, you know, we report metrics to the National Transit Database, essentially to the feds every month on on-time performance, you know, ridership, a variety of metrics. We already do that, and we already make that data, you know, publicly available. So I don't know if that's necessary.
Are you convinced that that both at the city level and the regional level, that access to employment centers will, in fact, increase with the Baltimore Link system? Because there are those who study this who who are concerned that that's not going to be the case.
So, you know, I think so it's a nuanced conversation. So, you know, on one hand, you know, we will be serving some job centers better than before. I would also argue that there are some job centers that have more service than they need today. And so, you know, a big part of Baltimore Link is, you know, restructuring the system so that it's taking people to where the jobs are at an appropriate level. So if we don't have enough buses going to the Amazon facility, we want to be sure we have enough buses going there. If, you know, there's another location where we've had buses going for years and there aren't any jobs there, and you're going to, you know, grade us on, you know, going to a job center that doesn't have as many jobs as it once does, and so we reduce the trips proportionally, then that area may see a loss in service. You know, we're trying to line up our service to where, you know, jobs and employment actually are. So I would just, you know, urge some caution in sort of a blanket, did we increase, you know, access to X job center?
And when it comes to places like the Amazon distribution center that you just alluded to, they are, of course, up and running 24/7, 7 days a week. What about the impact on weekend service? There are others who, there are those who are concerned that the weekend service in a lot of aspects has been cut back, and there are an awful lot of jobs, particularly jobs on the lower scale of compensation, take place on Saturdays and Sundays. Are they going to have an easy time getting to work?
Yeah, so one of the great things about Baltimore Link is that we've added weekend service hours as part of the program. We've added over 400 hours of weekend service. Many of those are on crosstown routes that access places more frequently than before. So that's something we're really excited about.
So for the next 2 weeks, as I understand it, fares on the buses, the light rail, the subway are eliminated. Everybody can ride any of those three things for free. Tell us what you're doing and how you're getting the public up to speed on this, not only the public that is used to riding public transit to their jobs and to recreational things, but folks who perhaps heretofore have not ridden public transit, but you're trying to convince them to do that.
Yeah, I think you nailed it. So, you know, from June 18th to June 30th, we do have a free fare period on our bus, our light rail, and our metro, so those are all completely free. On one hand, that's to really help our riders, you know, so helping our riders sort of learn the system penalty-free. You know, I'm not sitting here today saying, you know, we've rolled this out and it's perfect. You know, we're working out the kinks. We're working with our riders. We're listening to our riders on some, you know, tweaks and changes that need to be made. Another part, reason we're doing is for our operators, so that our operators can really learn and know and operate the routes in a safe and efficient manner without having to worry about, you know, fare box and you know, handing out, you know, day passes. And what you said at the end of your question is also really true. You know, it's really an opportunity for us to get out to those riders that tried MTA many, many years ago and said, you know what, I tried it, the bus didn't come on time. You know, so I think, you know, what we're saying to them is give us another shot. You know, we're rolling out a new MTA in a new era with a great new system and great infrastructure. Give us another shot. We think we can help you get to work.
And as you mentioned, no one would expect a rollout of a brand new system to go kink-free.
Yeah.
You've been up and running for 36 hours or so, something like that, since about 3 o'clock Sunday morning. What have you encountered so far? How's it going?
It's going pretty well so far. You know, as we you know, so as we've rolled out this system now, you know, we're certainly seeing some things. You know, we've identified, for example, some transfer areas that, you know, weren't transfer areas, you know, a week ago. And so, you know, we're appropriately deploying resources. You know, we're saying, oh, you know, a lot of people are transferring here. You know, this looks like a place where maybe we need to put a shelter, you know, in place for our passengers. You know, we're sending transit ambassadors. So one of the great things about MTA is that we're part of the Maryland Department of Transportation family, and so we have other business units we can rely on. So, you know, we have, over the course of the next few days, over 300 transit ambassadors from MTA, State Highway Administration, Maryland Vehicle Administration, you know, that are out helping people throughout the system at, you know, really high ridership bus stops, handing out schedules and materials and helping, you know, having conversations with riders to help them you know, learn the system, get where they need to go. So we're really excited about that.
Your predecessor, Paul Comfort, and his chief of staff, a guy named Jim Knighton, were dismissed from their positions just a couple of weeks before you rolled this thing out. Now, you yourself have been working on this a long time because you, as the director of programming and planning, you're the acting director. Is this a job you want to keep in perpetuity? And are you concerned that with a shakeup at the top like that, so close to the rollout of a brand new system, and the circumstances of Mr. Comfort's and Mr. Knighton's dismissal are a little vague, you know, should folks have confidence that the senior leadership is in place and not in turmoil?
Yeah, I think they should have confidence. You know, it's agencies aren't built around one person, and so, you know, we have a fantastic management team here at the MTA. We have fantastic operators. And Baltimore Link has been a team effort from the network piece to, you know, coordination on infrastructure, coordinating with Baltimore City, who we've met with, you know, a ton of times throughout this process. And so it's been a team effort from the beginning. It'll continue to be a team effort as we work out the kinks over the next few days. And I think folks should certainly have confidence in us. If anything, I think I'd like folks to think back to, you know, when this was first announced by Governor Hogan, you know, back in October of 2015, and the public outreach process that we have gone through that I think your guests today would attest is, you know, one of the, if not the most robust public outreach processes that the MTA has ever undergone. And the comments and the concerns and the way that we responded to criticism and to suggestions for route changes, for infrastructure, I think we've been open about that and open to route changes. We've made a lot of changes since the first version of this come out. So I think folks should have confidence in the openness of this agency and our willingness to work with our riders.
Kevin Quinn is the acting director of the MTA. Mr. Quinn, I know it's a very busy day, a busy few days for you, and I, again, appreciate your time. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you.
We'll have more on the debut of the Baltimore Link after a quick break. I will be joined then by Brian O'Malley of the Central Maryland Transit Alliance, Samuel Jordan of the Baltimore Transit Equity Coalition, and urban planner and author Klaus Philipson. You can join us as well, 410-662-8780. What was your commute to work like this morning? Midday at WIPR.org is where you can send us an email. Follow us on Twitter at Midday Tom Hall. Thanks for being with us. Stick around.
You're listening to Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.
And welcome back to Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up tomorrow on our program, a conversation about racial tension on college campuses and higher education following last month's stabbing death of a black Bowie State University student named Richard Collins III. We're going to take a look at the racial climate on university campuses. My guest will be Lawrence Ross. He's a best-selling author of a new book called Blackballed, The Black and White Politics of Race on America's Campuses, and Ashley Vasquez. She's a student at the University of Maryland and a member of Protect UMD, a coalition of 25 student organizations representing minority communities on the College Park campus. That's coming up tomorrow on Midday. If you're just joining us today, we're taking a look at the Baltimore Link, the $135 million revamp of the bus system here in Charm City and in its environs. It launched yesterday. For the next 2 weeks, you can ride the bus, the light rail, and the subway for free, as everyone who currently takes public transit gets used to the new routes and routines, and the MTA tries to convince those who don't regularly use public transit to give it a try. I have three very, very astute experts who study this kind of thing in our studio with me today. Samuel Jordan is the president of the Baltimore Transit Equity Coalition. Mr. Jordan, welcome to the show.
And thank you so much.
Brian O'Malley is an urban planner and the president and CEO of the Central Maryland Transportation Alliance. Mr. O'Malley, nice to have you.
Great to be here.
And Klaus Philipson is a good friend of our show. He's an urban planner and architect who's long been involved with transportation issues here in Baltimore. He's the author of a new book called Baltimore, Reinventing an Industrial Legacy City. He also serves as a consultant to the Maryland Transit Administration. Klaus, good to see you.
Good afternoon.
You are welcome to join our program and our conversation, 410-662-8780, our email midday at WIPR.org, to follow us on Twitter at Midday Tom Hall. So, Brian O'Malley, you have studied what we had before. You've studied what they're proposing that we're going to have now. What do you think? Is this going to work? Is this going to be an improvement? And if so, in what ways? And if not, how come?
Well, number one, we want it to succeed, and we encourage the MTA to do this. We're at the Transportation Alliance. We're not fans of the status quo. The system we have now is a large fleet of buses, but there's a lot of room for improvement, for connecting people to jobs, for being more reliable, for being more efficient. But that being said, people are going through a lot of change. I just rode the CityLink Silver to get here. People are struggling with it, and so they deserve to know, is Baltimore Link better than the old system? And that means, is it more reliable? Is it more efficient? Is it getting them from their A to B quicker? Does it provide them access to more of life's destinations, jobs, shopping, appointments, healthcare, education, et cetera? And our own study last fall, or last summer, I should say, found that the improvements were varied, but overall it was marginal. A lot of it was staying the same. We saw some parts of the region get better, some not. Sometimes during the week get better, some not. And we want to see better results than that. And so that's the spirit in which we're submitting comments to the MTA. That's the spirit in which we're here today.
What about the process that they went through? Mr. Quinn was talking about the you know, the great deal of outreach that the MTA tried to do with the public to get input, to get feedback. I mean, are you satisfied that they did what they could have done and should have done in that regard?
I give them very high marks for being out there, for doing a lot of meetings, for doing a lot of outreach, for having the ambassadors out there. Where I'm not yet satisfied, or where I think there's a lot of room for improvement, is those measurable outcomes. So you asked Administrator Quinn a question about measurable outcomes, and he talked about constant monitoring and headway management, but didn't actually say we're putting, you know, the baseline numbers, this is where we were and this is where we're going to be, in a public place, on the website, somewhere where we can all check, where you as a journalist or we as advocates can check and see, is it getting better in terms of how reliable it is, in terms of how fast it is, in terms of getting people access to destinations more efficiently than the old system did.
And Samuel Jordan, your organization, the Baltimore Transit Equity Coalition,
yes.
What's your take on what we're now going to have as our transportation system here?
Well, the Baltimore Transit Equity Coalition, Tom, if I understand your question, clearly is that we want an improved transit, travel, and commute experience for the riders. That's why we're called the Baltimore Transit Equity Coalition. We want fairness, however, for the riders. And what we see with the Baltimore Link is a cynical, dismissive consolation prize for the cancellation of the Red Line. There is no stretch of the imagination by which you can justify or even assume that a $135 million project over 5 years will accomplish what we were anticipating and had planned with the Baltimore Red Line project. I spent 6 years of my life as a volunteer planner going to cities all across the country, including Seattle, Portland, Denver, to look at their transit experiences and see what we could bring back to Baltimore. And what I can say is that the Baltimore Red Line project, that's 10,000 jobs. That is not part of the Baltimore Link prospectus. The Baltimore Red Line project is dramatically reduced commute times. That is not part of the Baltimore Link prospectus. The Baltimore Red Line project would bring connectivity with an additional 250,000 jobs in the Baltimore metropolitan region. That is also not part of the Baltimore Link prospectus. We can't forget that there are 19 stations along the 14.2-mile route of the Red Line that all would be sites for additional transit-oriented development. That's an additional 5,000 jobs and another $3 billion in investment. The Baltimore Link project doesn't bring this. Now, we want the improved service. We want the improved transit experience. So we want to have Kevin Quinn and MTA just do their jobs. But it is by no means the impact that we planned for and expected and had approved and funded with the Baltimore Red Line project. So where we're saying is do your job. But frankly, the entire Baltimore region needs to take a close look at what the governor did with that cancellation and see that there's a great hole left in planning for transit assets and training and planning transit programs in Baltimore. What we still need is the east-west axis that would join it from Bayview to Woodlawn and CMS. We still need the beginnings of a transit system, a multimodal integrated transit system with the Red Line as an important spur for all of Central Maryland. This is the economic heart of the state. So we need to see a lot more than this. In fact, hopefully before the program is over, we'll talk about some of the other impacts, including environmental impacts.
And Klaus Philipson, we've talked last time you were on the show about this notion of a coordinated regional linked system. I mean, I can't think of another word, connected system. Does Baltimore Link at least represent a first step in that kind of thing?
Yeah, it's all about link, right? So the question really needs to put into the bigger context. So Baltimore, with the 620-some thousand people that we have, we are ranking relatively well in terms of the passenger miles of transit that we provide in in the region. So we are number 10 in terms of passenger miles of transit offered, but we are only number 29 in terms of size. The problem with the current offering is that it's not reliable and that it's not linked and connected enough. And what Samuel Jordan just said, that the Red Line would have offered a third rail system that would have began to connect things in the way that you can consider
And we're talking about connecting the light rail to the buses, to the subway, to the
right.
You know, so that you have other options besides just a subway or just a light rail.
The MTA moves about slightly under 300,000 people a day on transit, and 225,000 or so of that are on buses. So the attitude that the MTA took to say we take the bus system and improve it and make it work the way it's supposed to work affects the largest part of their ridership. So that is all good. And then, of course, they went in and said, well, if we run this existing arsenal of equipment that we have, the 744 buses and the operators, more efficiently, and the administrator just repeated that, you know, then we gain something out of it and we can make it work better by running it more efficiently. And that is the big question that we don't have the answer yet, whether that really works. The only other city that did an overhaul like this was Houston. Now many other cities are embarking on something similar, but what's often overlooked is that Houston is very different from Baltimore, but also they had two additional light rail lines at the time when they did the bus overhaul. So they got some slack. They had all of a sudden less to do with the bus service, so they could make the remaining bus service more efficient. And we don't have that. So we are basically saying we're taking the same coaches, the same operators, and we are getting it better from one day or another just by running it differently. That is the promise that where we still need to see whether that really happens.
So, Brian O'Malley, it's not a foregone conclusion that this is, in fact, a better system than the old bus system? Or do we at least agree that this probably is a better, more efficient system that will serve more people? I mean, obviously, it ain't the Red Line, and so that's perhaps a different conversation. But is taking the bus today and tomorrow going to be a better deal than taking the bus last week?
Well, let's talk about what that means. I saw those of us who were driving around the region over the weekend or this morning might have seen the variable messaging signs on the highway where they're advertising Baltimore Link, and they're saying faster, more reliable. Well, those faster and reliable can be measured. Show us the numbers. What was it before? What is it now? We can look at the National Transit Database, which Administrator Quinn mentioned. That doesn't mean much to most riders. It's mostly measures of rider passenger miles and vehicle passenger miles and vehicle revenue miles and things like that that are industry insider measures of cost effectiveness, but don't really tell the rider if the experience is better. So let's use meaningful measures for the riders and make it public. Last summer, the MTA put out some numbers when it did a lot of the public meetings in July and August. But since then, they've backed away from sharing what those numbers are. Those were numbers based on a version of the plan that's since been revised.
So you've asked them for some data to help you continue the reporting that you're doing on this and the studying that you're doing on this, and they've been reluctant to release the data?
Yeah. To be clear, we asked for updated the plan in December, we asked for the data so we could do the same analysis that we did during the summer. The MTA said, no, you can submit a Public Information Act request. We submitted two, one for the digital file so we could do our own analysis, and the second Public Information Act request for their updated numbers, the same numbers that they published in July, and they denied both.
They give you a reason?
They said it was a plan under deliberation, a plan still under deliberation. So the public sector needs to be able to deliberate things in private before they go public. Well, here we are now. It's not a plan under deliberation. It's on the street, and riders are experiencing it. So I think it's high time to show those numbers, say what's getting better measurably or not, or at least what the baseline measures were and when we're going to come back and check on the updated numbers.
410-662-8780. We're talking about Baltimore Link. We're talking about transit in the Charm City area. Our email address here at Midday, midday@wipr.org. You can follow us on Twitter at Midday Tom Hall. Samuel Jordan, obviously, anytime you change the bus routes and you change some stops, you get rid of some stops, you add some stops, there's going to be winners and losers. The Baltimore Sun, Colin Campbell's done some great reporting on this project from the very beginning. They interviewed a woman named Gloria Thomas. She has worked at Hopkins for like 20 years. Her bus is, she's on the number 60. I think that runs up down Falls Road to get her over to Hopkins. And they've eliminated that route, and she thinks that her job may be in jeopardy, and she's not the only one. Obviously, there are people who are going to be more inconvenienced by these changes rather than less inconvenienced. But do you have a sense of how many people that's affecting or the percentage of riders that that's going to affect?
Well, we're looking at it this way. I think you can get the numbers. We need more metrics. I think I can certainly second Brian's note. We need the numbers. We need the before and after numbers from MTA. But keep in mind, 55% of MTA's ridership is transit dependent. These are people who don't have access to cars, like myself. I'm transit dependent. If the 23, 26, and 40 can't get me there, I can't get there. Now, what that means, though, is that the entire region, particularly employers, know what that means for their workforce. It means that if that employee is dependent upon the Baltimore bus system to get to work, we can count on them not making the 3 times 15 minutes and you're fired, no questions asked, criterion. That means that people who live in West Baltimore, in fact, keep in mind that fewer than 1 out of 3 jobs in Baltimore region can be reached in 90 minutes. That's an hour and a half. That means that if your city, your state, and your transit administration can't get you 7 miles in 95 minutes, and we did this, we documented this in the WBL broadcast, that means that they don't really care if you get there or not, because you're going to be in the loop of repeated underemployment. You're going to be out of a job. You will not be contributing to the economy here in Baltimore. Let me make sure this is clear. There is a historical context for this decision. Baltimore Link was announced in October of 2015. The Baltimore Red Line was canceled in June of 2015. After the governor got a few complaints, then he said, well, we'll have the Baltimore Link. But remember, he canceled it with no analysis whatsoever on the impact of the cancellation, particularly on communities that are transit dependent, African-American communities, low-income communities, and those that are transit dependent. So I want to make sure your audience knows this of this historical context, because we see equity as a clear issue here that opens the gateway to any economic prosperity we're going to experience. The first decision the governor made once he toured the uprising zone was, I'll build you a $30 million prison for youth. Everybody knows that Baltimore Uprising was not a demand for a new prison. His second decision was, I'll take about $30 million out of the education budget. We don't need education. The third decision was to cancel the Red Line. This was a boost. This was actually a chance to break the corralling influence of race-based transit policy for so many communities in Baltimore. The fourth decision, however, was when the governor racialized the issue even more by taking the money from the State Transportation Trust Fund that was dedicated to the Red Line and allocating it for roads and highway projects in rural areas of the state where his mostly white constituents live. Okay? Everyone knows, in fact, we're going to bring more studies to the public's attention that show that a dollar spent in a highway or road project in a rural area of the city, of the state, is going to return about one-third less than that same dollar spent on transportation in the urban core. So we're saying to Baltimore, stop trembling. Turn around and look at the beast that just chased you in the house. Face it. The Red Line project is absolutely essential to the economic development of this region, and we've got to fight for it, and it can be done.
All right, lots to unpack there, and we will do so when we come back. That's Samuel Jordan. He's the president of the Baltimore Transit Equity Coalition. I'm also joined here in Studio A by Brian O'Malley. He's an urban planner and the president and CEO of the Central Maryland Transportation Alliance, and Klaus Philipson. He's an architect, an urban designer, and the president of ArchPlan, an architecture and urban design firm. He has long been involved with transportation issues here in Baltimore. He's got a new book out. It's called Baltimore Reinventing an Industrial Legacy City. You are welcome to join us when we come back. 410-662-8780, our email, midday@wipr.org. And you can follow us on Twitter at Midday Tom Hall. On Mondays here on Midday, it's our practice to read the names of the people who've lost their lives to violence in the previous week. We stand in witness to their untimely deaths, and we remember their families and friends in their hour of grief. So far this year, 161 people in Baltimore have lost their lives to violence. Last week, there were 7 victims of homicide in our city. They are Marco Stevenson, age 22, Antonio Griffin, age 26, Therese Pinckney, age 22, Charmaine Wilson, age 37, Rodney Wheatley, age 28, Sebastian Dvorak, age 27, and Emmanuel Johnson. He was a 5-month-old baby, allegedly beaten to death by his father. One of the victims that we reported last week as unidentified has since been identified. Tyone Brown was 19 years old. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
This is Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.
Welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. If you've just joined us, we're talking about the new bus system in Baltimore on this first work day since it was rolled out yesterday. It's called Baltimore Link. Riders of mass transit in Charm City can ride for free for the next 2 weeks. That's buses, subways, and light rail as Baltimore Link goes into effect. Brian O'Malley is an urban planner and the president and CEO of the Central Maryland Transportation Alliance. They work to improve and expand transportation options in Central Maryland. Samuel Jordan is the president of the Baltimore Transit Equity Coalition. And Klaus Philipson is here as well. He's an architect, an urban designer, and architectural writer. He's the president of ArchPlan, an architecture and urban design firm. And he's the author of a brand new book called Baltimore Reinventing an Industrial Legacy City. We'd love to hear about what your experience on the first work day of Baltimore Link has been. 410-662-8780, our email midday@wipr.org, and our Twitter handle at Midday Tom Hall. David in Baltimore, you know something about what it takes to drive a bus here in Baltimore. Welcome to the show. Thanks for your call.
Well, thank you, sir. Yes, I do. I'm a bus operator myself, and I've actually driven for 10 years prior to becoming the president and business agent for Local 1300. And I like to say,
and that's the union that represents the drivers.
Mm-hmm. That is correct, and I like to say hello to Bryant and Sam there.
Hi, David.
Hi. Listen, we all have concerns about what's been going on. The MTA was supposed to send over schedules so that we could actually review it, because we have a schedule committee that actually look at the schedules, and MTA did not send the schedules over to us, and we should have been receiving them way back in like January and February. Now, they were saying that they were taking them in and training them, which is true. They had trained them, retrained them, retrained them again, and then retrained them again. So it has been just a mess that they've been trying to put this together. And then we were asking to get them the schedules that was coming up for this summer pick. They actually sent the summer pick over. They were supposed to be sending them over to us on the 15th, which they did not. Then they decided they was going to send them over on the 22nd. They did not. Then they decided to send it over on the 25th. So that gave us a half a day on the 25th to review the schedules along on the 26th, and then they put it out for pick on the 29th. So that was the weekend coming up. So you figure half a day Thursday, all day Friday, and then we had it for, the weekend, Saturday and Sunday, but, of course, no one was in office at MTA. So really, we really didn't get an opportunity to review the schedules. I actually made contact by email with MTA asking them to hold up and give us an opportunity to review these schedules and all, which they sent back saying that they were going to move forward anyway. Unfortunately, MTA is just not forthcoming with what they are actually doing. I mean, they're giving the public an impression that everything is really good and is going to work fine. And we really would hope that it turns out well, but right now, I think it should be one objective, and that one objective should be providing a safe, efficient, and effective service for the riding public. And right now, we have not been doing just that, not at all.
All right. Well, David, thank you for your call. I mean, Sam Jordan, you've been getting sort of updates throughout the morning about how things are rolling out so far. And again, you know, it's first day.
It is the first day, and it's going to be a bumpy rollout. There will be a lot of chaos. In fact, this morning coming in, I actually commended the driver for being patient and courteous. Yet so many questions were actually increasing the dwell time for the bus at each stop. But I want to let you know that, for example, we have filled reports. I'm getting them now, but I had one from early this morning at the Light and Pratt Inner Harbor stop where the schedule says that there should be 12-minute headways.
So a bus arrives every 12 minutes.
Every 12 minutes. And what we found was instead there was a bus at 7:21, 7:25, 7:26, 7:54, another at 7:54, and one at 8:07. Now, this is stacking and bunching. Now, we know this is not sustainable, but even when it does happen normally, and there's a basis of a lot of complaints, this means that there are two or three buses that are too crowded, can't get on those, you're waiting again. So yeah, that headway, whatever it might have been on the schedule, is certainly extended, and that ride or that commute is also longer and more inconvenient.
All right, lots more calls to get to, but before we do that, Klaus Philipson, there are continued efforts to revive the Red Line. I mean, is the Red Line completely dead? If you ask the governor, he'd say yes, but I mean, do you think that there is the possibility that this project could be reinstated at some point?
Yeah, it's completely planned. The alignment is there. The environmental studies are there. It is a matter of funding and political will. So I hope it will come back like some other large projects that were politically dead for a while. They came back. And I think it would still be the right project to do in Baltimore. I do wanted to say something about the perspective of metrics. You know, you can look at efficiency on transit from the rider's perspective, which you should, or you can look at it from the transit agency's perspective. There's this old joke that transit would run the most effective if it had no riders, right? You know, the riders are slowing the system down. So what does the rider really expect? And from when on is it intolerable? And what are the largest impacts? And so the problem with the discussion about link is a little bit that the goals have shifted. So in the beginning, it was making it faster, and then it was more about making it more reliable. I would venture to say that if somebody wants to go to work, that predictability and reliability is the most important thing. But if it takes like 90 minutes, then it's also not acceptable in terms of speed. And so what Link does is make these very long routes shorter. And the assumption is that when they're shorter, they can run more predictably because they're not subject to so many whims along the long way. And for the rider, however, that means you have to transfer occasionally. So like when you were on the 23 bus before, you could go a long, long route on it, and now you have to transfer. And so these transfers are only then acceptable when the next bus is actually on time and you are not waiting another vagary there, you know, with the next bus come. And so the promise of whether the link is really doing what it's supposed to do is only good when it happens in real. And, you know, today I observed a number of buses too, as well as yesterday, and some were awfully off schedule and some others were on schedule. And the general confusion, of course, makes it difficult to use today's experience as any indicator for the future, because it was the riders that were confused, it was the drivers that were confused, and sometimes even the transit ambassadors were confused.
Brian O'Malley, we have an email from Walt, who lives in Baltimore County, and part of this Baltimore Link thing is to help people from Baltimore County and Arundel County, Howard County, get into Baltimore to jobs, putatively. He asks, what are the new links between light rail and the bus system? I mean, are those improved? Are they increased? What can you say about that?
So that was one of the talking points when Baltimore Link was rolled out, was that it would improve connections between modes. So we have a light rail, we have a metro subway line, we have MART commuter rail, we have commuter buses, and then we have the local bus system. And Baltimore Link was primarily redesigning the local bus routes, but it was also meant to improve those connections between modes. So for example, taking West Baltimore MARC, which is a place where bus routes and the MARC commuter line come together, it would have been a red line light rail station if that project were built, and made that more of a hub. So that parking lot's been turned into more of a hub for transit. So there are some places on the system where you should see better connections. But that can also be measured. How many times are people transferring between the modes rather than just riding one or the other? Does the ideally the proof is in the travel time and I think the ridership. If you start to have a better network, you see those things get better.
Yeah, and Sam Jordan's talking about so many people who have to travel an hour and a half to get to their job.
An hour and a half.
If you got a car, an hour and a half will get you to Philadelphia, for God's sake.
Actually, you'd be on your way back from Philadelphia, perhaps. But the truth of the matter is, for the transit dependent particularly, and for the frequent riders of the transit system, it wasn't necessary to rebrand the system to improve the performance of the system. In fact, for those riders, anything other than reduced commute time can hardly be called progress. So, you know, there's no concern about the beautiful colors of the new buses. If I still can't get to my job in an hour and a half, less than an hour and a half, which leaves me always under threat of losing that job, I cannot be satisfied with the so-called progress. So we want to make sure that's clear. But I also want to make sure I know we're getting close to the hour, but there is this also issue of we want MTA to acknowledge the fact that transit is at the nexus of some very serious social problems, housing, healthcare, education. Okay, even voter
food
suppression.
Food deserts, access to
there are a number of food
store.
Deserts, but right. There's also food insecurity. In addition to the food desert. So we are linking all these issues, and our program on the 24th, this Saturday, 12 noon at St. Vincent's Church at Front and Fayette, our theme there is transit equity and equity solidarity. That is, we want everybody else who's dealing with issues that have equity challenge, fairness challenge, to look at what we have in common. This is only one thing that we can deal with right now, but we must succeed with it, and we can. We want to make sure this mantra is clear to everybody, too. In the industry, the mantra is that development follows rail. Buses follow development, and we're adding to that. The money follows the political will. If we can build a political will that was there that approved the funds and the money for the red line, we can, in fact, complete that system.
Our phones are completely lit up, and we are completely out of time. And I apologize to the callers who've been so patient and waiting. We were not able to get to you. There's so much more to talk about this, and we will continue to cover this very important issue. But I appreciate all three of you gentlemen joining us today and Administrator Quinn joining us earlier in the program. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Samuel Jordan is the president of the Baltimore Transit Equity Coalition. Klaus Philipson is an architect, an urban designer, and writer. His latest book is Baltimore Reinvesting in an Industrial Legacy City, and Brian O'Malley is the president and CEO of the Central Maryland Transportation Alliance. More on our website, wypr.org/midday. That's it for us today. Coming up tomorrow, a conversation about racial tension in higher education. Lawrence Ross will join me. He's a best-selling author and lecturer and writer. His first book, The Divine Nine, The History of African-American Fraternities and Sororities, has become the preeminent book on African-American fraternities and sororities. His latest book is called Blackballed, The Black and White Politics of Race on America's Campuses. We're going to talk to him as well as Ashley Vasquez. She's a student at the University of Maryland and a member of Protect UMD. That's a coalition of 25 student organizations who represent minority communities on the College Park campus. So that's all coming up tomorrow. on Midday. Thanks to the Diz for supplying lunch today. The Diz is located at 300 West 30th Street in the heart of Remington. They feature signature burgers, wings, steaks, and jumbo lump crab cakes. The Diz is open for lunch and dinner. They serve breakfast on the weekends. You can find them on the web at thedizbaltimore.com. I'm Tom Hall. I appreciate your tuning in. Have a great day.